Good afternoon. I'd like to call the committee to order. We have a quorum, I assume. We have a quorum. This afternoon, our first order of business, members, is to welcome our new page to our committee. Laura Hoffman is with us. She's standing over here. Laura, if you just come in the middle here so everybody can see you. I know it's, a lot of people in the room. And I just asked Laura to introduce herself and just tell us a little bit about her so that we can get to know her a little bit.
Yeah, I'm Laura Hoffman. I grew up in Eden Prairie and graduated from the U of M with a degree in political science last May. I spent a lot of time at the Capitol last session and thought that lawmaking is pretty cool, so I wanted to get in on the action.
All right. Well, thank you. We're really glad you're here. And this is her very first hearing. So we're all going to help her and,
we'll show her the ropes.
Just understand. Okay. Representative Franson is going to show her the ropes. Okay. I think that's just great. All right, members, we're going to start with House File 1988. We did have an informational hearing on this bill, I'm going to move that House File 1988 be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. And
I have an oral amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay. And Representative Lane has an oral amendment, and what would that be?
Just simply on line 5.28, delete provider and substitute establishment. So it would be a funeral establishment instead of a funeral provider.
Okay.
And this is a request of the Department of Health just to align with their statutory definitions.
Okay, so Representative Lane moves that. I'd have to move. I'll move that on line 5.28, delete the word provider and insert the word establishment.
Yes.
Get it? Okay.
Yes,
do we need to vote on that? I assume we do. Okay. All those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So, members, we had an informational hearing on this. This is a bill that we are going to vote on, and we didn't have an opportunity for amendments before. So, is there any discussion or any amendments? Okay, seeing none. Then I will renew my motion that House File 1988 be re-referred as amended to the Committee on Commerce. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no.
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 The motion prevails, and the amendment, the bill is re-referred. Thank you,
Thank
Representative
you.
Lane. Okay, we're going to move now to House File 1931, Representative Halverson. And we also have before us Representative Kahn's bill, but we are not actually hearing that bill. We're going to hear Representative Halverson's bill. And so before we begin with this bill, I would like to say that it is the chair's intention to hear the entire bill and take testimony on the bill, but at the end of the hearing, the chair is going to move to remove section one of the bill, and then we will vote on that, and then we will proceed, I believe, with the second section to move to re-refer that. So with that in mind, members, we will start, and I'll call on Representative Halverson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. This bill, this issue came up for me this summer in a couple of different ways. I think if we think back historically when we first became aware of this product called electronic cigarettes and this action called vaping, it was probably within the last 6 months or 1 year or 2 years. It's a very, very new trend that we are seeing. Because of that, we've got local units of government, we have businesses, we have others that are trying to figure out how this needs to be regulated. The federal government is looking at this as well because it is a product that delivers nicotine and other chemicals into the system and into the air. So because of that, I started taking a look at to see what other states have done and what other conversations are going on. Additionally, my city, Eagan, this spring, if you can call it that, has put this on their legislative agenda for the year. Local units of government, the League of Minnesota Cities, and others are looking for some real guidance in terms of how to deal with these businesses as they're popping up in our communities, and also wondering what the repercussions are for regulating electronic cigarettes. So with that, if it's all right with you, I can walk through the bill and talk about it point by point, and I know that there are some folks here who are ready to give testimony on the specifics of the bill.
All right.
So starting with Section 1, which, as Representative Liebling says, we'll talk about in an informational format, this essentially, for the purpose of the Clean Indoor Air Act, will call the utilization of e-cigarettes smoking. And therefore, it would not be allowed in public places. So, in this room, for example, or in your bars or restaurants. Keeping in mind that there's a number of businesses in Minnesota that have already taken strong action to limit the use of e-cigarettes, including Target Field, the Mall of America. Delta Airlines prohibits it on their flights. And their Buffalo Wild Wings, I was there the other day, they don't allow it. There's a nice big sign there. So it's a trend that we're seeing more and more with businesses. The Business Owners and Managers Association International have gotten so many questions from their tenants. These are folks who own buildings or manage buildings about e-cigarettes that they've taken a position as a international association to treat electronic cigarettes like cigarettes for the purpose of smoking in indoor air because of the concern about what might be in the air when this product is used. So there's a very strong, along with all the health issues, there's also a very strong local government and business interest in this particular issue. So adding it to the Clean Indoor Air Act would also mean that sampling would be allowed in stores that are expressly permitted to do sampling. So if you have a tobacco shop and you're allowed to sample your cigar products, your e-cigarette products would also be allowed to be sampled by your customers. Interestingly enough, Clean Indoor Air itself, I think many of us know, has overwhelming support in this state. About 87%, according to the most recent poll, of Minnesotans support clean indoor air. And a new poll just released today actually showed that 79% of Minnesotans support adding e-cigarettes to our clean indoor air standard. And I think that it really speaks to the fact that Minnesotans have come to expect that as a state government that we are making sure that we're providing a clean and safe breathing environment for our citizens. Moving on to Section 2, this, of course, prohibits the use in schools. It seems like a no-brainer, but if you look at current statute, e-cigarettes are not prohibited for use in our public schools. This would be a strong policy to protect kids. We're hearing more and more from teachers and administrators who are seeing this used clandestinely or not so clandestinely by students in their schools. And we're also taking a strong stance to say that we're not going to normalize this behavior of delivering addictive nicotine to our youth. Also, you won't be seeing it in the teacher's lounge, probably, Representative Morgan. Section 3 authorizes local units of government to require their retailers to retain a tobacco license to sell e-cigarettes. The reason being is because we're prohibiting their sale to minors in Minnesota, we want local units of government, local units of government are asking to be able to perform the enforcements necessary. And so this collecting the fee for the license will allow them to include e-cigarettes on their compliance and monitoring checks that they do around their city, since local governments are enforcing their utilization and sales.
And could I just stop you for mm-hmm. 1 minute? Excuse me, Representative Halverson. To the audience, I believe I can smell some vaping going on in this room, and if you are doing that, I would just say that I'm going to ask you to please not do that in this room at this time. So, thank you. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next section, Section 4. Again, this is a very proven tactic to keep cigarettes and nicotine delivery products out of the hands of kids. We do know that these are being marketed heavily to children. There are uses of cartoon characters, uses of flavors like bubble gum and gummy bear and all kinds of sweet and attractive kid-friendly flavors of these products that could be very attractive to kids using it. And we don't just know that because we know what kids like, but we also have the science to show that use of e-cigarettes by children in our schools has doubled nationally over the last year. That's a tremendous increase in use of a very addictive product. And so we know that keeping the products behind the counter and making sure that the purchaser has to go through the clerk at the counter is a very effective way to keep them out of the hands of kids. They can't be sold next to the gum or next to your candy bars. Additionally, for establishments that are exclusively selling to folks 18 and older, so those tobacco shops, they have the same open sell laws that our current tobacco regulations would have. So they can have open sell and they continue to. Section 5, this allows local units of government to maintain their own control over the regulation and use of e-cigarettes in their own communities. Local units of government are increasingly becoming active in this issue, and they're asking the state for more clear guidance and for a statewide standard, but in the event that the state doesn't provide that, they will be allowed to do that on their own. Additionally, in Section 6, this just imposes criminal penalties to folks who are selling to kids under 18 years old. We don't want these products in the hands of minors. We don't want folks to, you know, our young people to be starting a new lifelong addiction, which we know anybody who's tried to quit smoking knows what a tough addiction nicotine really, really is. So, it clarifies what tobacco-related devices are. We know that this is a moving and developing industry, and so we try to make it clear that there can be a lot of ways to deliver tobacco and nicotine delivery products, and we wanted to make that clear in law and define what parts of the components of e-cigarettes have to be sold behind the kept behind the counter. So you can't go and buy your vaping device from on top of the counter, or you can't have that by your gum at the convenience store and then have the juice behind the counter. It all has to be behind the counter. So it just makes it real consistent. And then finally, Section 7, I believe I'm finally, nope, almost finally. We expressly prohibit sales to minors, as you know, not just with the e-cigarette device, but again, anticipating any other potential delivery products we might be having for nicotine, making sure that they're not getting into the hands of kids. So a nicotine-spiked water or whatever product there may be there. And that's the bill. I should note that sales to minors are actually illegal in Minnesota now, so this allows us the enforcement devices necessary to maintain that under the Tobacco Modernization and Compliance Act of 2010. And then additionally, in 2013, the legislature took the action to tax e-cigarettes like cigarettes. So they're taxed as the other tobacco products, if you will, based on their nicotine-containing components. And that's the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions or hear from testifiers.
All right. I'm not aware that any members have questions at this point, so we could probably move to the testifiers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ed Ellinger, the Commissioner of Health, and I'm here to speak in favor of House File 1931 and the use of the state statute to control e-cigarettes like we do regular tobacco. I graduated from high school in the year that the Surgeon General issued his first report on tobacco and health, and so for my entire post-secondary career, I've been seeing the efforts to control the use of tobacco, and we've made tremendous progress going from having about half of our population be tobacco users now to under 20% nationwide. And we've made tremendous progress, particularly in Minnesota, when we've had the Clean Indoor Air Act, and in 2007 when we've had the Freedom to Breathe Act, we've seen some really marked declines in tobacco use. But all along the way, the tobacco industry has responded with some creative ways to try to get around some of the efforts from the public health community to restrict tobacco use. And certainly since 2007, when we had the Freedom to Breathe Act, and other states have really recognized the importance of clean indoor air to the health of their citizens, the tobacco industry and others who have some profit motives related to the addiction to nicotine have come up with some interesting products that have tried to get around the Clean Indoor Air Acts and have been marketing these as ways to get around some of those statutes and laws. And e-cigarettes, as has been pointed out, are a relatively new phenomenon. They really came about in 2007 and have really taken off dramatically. They're currently not regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. There are over 300 different manufacturers and no regulations in terms of the consistency of the product and the quality from one e-cigarette to another. Labeling is really inconsistent and sometimes inaccurate, claiming that they're at times nicotine-free when there really are nicotine in the product. The potential risks of e-cigarettes are really still undetermined. There's a lot of work being done to see what the risks actually are. But there are known carcinogens and toxins found in e-cigarettes, some of the same ones that are found in regular cigarettes. The vapor emitted from e-cigarettes has not been found to been proven safe. It's really an untested product. And we're certainly asking, certainly in the public health community, to have FDA weigh in on the e-cigarettes. And I'm hoping that they will do so relatively soon. So until we know more about the long-term health effects, I don't think we can really confidently say that they are safe to use at this point in time. And without proper regulation of FDA, it's really difficult to know what other kinds of things are in and what other kind of risks that we have with e-cigarettes. And I'm particularly concerned as a pediatrician about the way that they are being marketed to children. As you've heard, they come in candy flavors and being marketed with cartoon characters with approaches that have been shown to be effective in getting children to take on products. And children, particularly, are really sensitive to social norms. So we're seeing, particularly with the recent surveys done by the CDC, the uptake of e-cigarettes among middle school children and doubling in a year's time is really of concern, because I don't think any of us would really like to see our children become addicted to nicotine. And the methods being used, marketing to children and the uptake, is really of concern. We're also seeing the concern that nicotine can be toxic, and we've seen increasing reports from poison control centers about calls related to nicotine poisoning. So this is a concern among children. There's also been a concern about, and lots of talk about e-cigarettes as a way of doing cessation. And there's no body of evidence that proves e-cigarettes help people to quit smoking. There are lots of approved, FDA-approved tobacco control products, cessation products, such as nicotine gum and lozenges and patches. So we don't know, and we know that they work. We don't know about e-cigarettes. And particularly, there's no way to tell in e-cigarettes what concentrations are being used, what kind of doses are being used. So that it's a unregulated product. And then oftentimes, we also see that this is really a way of interfering with cessation because we got dual use, use of e-cigarettes in places where cigarettes aren't allowed, but then keeps doing dual use, both cigarettes and e-cigarettes. So we think that there is a loophole in the Freedom to Breathe Act, because people, when they put together the Freedom to Breathe Act, could not anticipate e-cigarettes coming on the market. And I think if they had anticipated that we would have included him in there. But since that wasn't known at the time, I think there is a loophole in our Freedom to Breathe Act that really needs to be plugged. Like I said, there's no body of evidence to show that the vapor emitted from e-cigarettes is safe. We really do need to minimize the use of unregulated products of unknown health risks. Also, e-cigarettes may complicate the enforcement of existing smoke-free laws because it may be difficult to distinguish e-cigarettes from conventional cigarettes. Certainly, as the agency responsible for regulating, that becomes a real concern. E-cigarette use in smoke-free areas may make clean indoor air laws less effective at keeping children and families free from exposure to nicotine and other potentially harmful cancer-causing chemicals. And e-cigarettes actually may undermine our efforts to encourage people to quit smoking through this dual use that I talked about. So I think including the e-cigarettes in the Freedom to Breathe Act, treating them as other tobacco products, would be appropriate for the health of our society and particularly for the health of our children. That's the conclusion of my testimony. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Ellinger. Looking around at members to see if there are questions, and I am okay. Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a brief question for the Commissioner. You stated in your testimony there's nothing that has, there's no proof that these are unsafe. And just in my reading of this, my understanding is there's very little data on either side, just to kind of give a full picture. There's no data that it's unsafe. There's no data that it's safe. The data is missing on both sides of this product at this point. Is that a correct understanding?
Dr. Ellinger.
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, I may have misspoke. There are no data to show that these are safe. There are some data that there are chemicals in the vapors. We don't know all of what the chemicals are. We also don't know some of the things that are in the capsules. We don't know the dose of nicotine. So there's no data to show that they are safe.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the Commissioner, I'm looking at specifically line 5.16. And I'm wondering if the Commissioner could speak to, I see, simulate smoking in the delivery of nicotine. My question for the Commissioner is, what if nicotine is not present? What would his opinion be of e-cigarettes or vaping in consideration of that?
Dr. Ellinger.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm trying to think of why somebody would want to vape if there's nothing in there. And since we don't know what's in some of these capsules, we don't know, we haven't done the analysis of these, they're not unregulated, I would really not know what would be in there and determine that there is nothing. And we've also known that people have claimed that there are nicotine-free, and when they have tested those, nicotine was present. So I just don't think that we have confidence that there are no chemicals in these packets.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to vaping and the usage thereof, is there any desirability to use that as a mechanism for other substances, either of a medicinal nature or otherwise?
Dr. Ellinger.
And Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding is that vaping machines, vaping implements can be used for the delivery of other substances, and that can also be a concern.
Representative Albright.
Do you know, thank you, Madam Chair, do you know of any other studies underway that would go to the heart of the substances effectively in the vapor itself?
Dr. Ellinger.
Madam Chair, Representative, I understand our request to the FDA is to have these regulated so that they would test all of these chemicals. I don't know a lot of the research that is being done across the country in terms of identifying what the products are. I do know people are looking at them as to see if they are effective or not in cessation, but I don't know of studies that are being done looking at the chemicals themselves. That would be a responsibility of the FDA to do those kinds of tests and make that a requirement.
Okay, and Dr. Ellinger, along those lines, I don't know if you know or Representative Halverson, so are the cartridges labeled with their ingredients so that the user can know what they're putting into their lungs and what they're presumably putting out into the air for other people to breathe? Dr. Ellinger?
Madam Chair, I don't believe they're labeled. I have not looked at them. Do you know if they're...
Representative Halverson?
Madam Chair, there are some labeling that takes place in terms of letting a customer know how much nicotine is in the product. As Dr. Ellinger said, we don't know. We found those to be faulty as they've been tested and studied. The CDC has taken on taking a look at what's in the juice versus what's labeled on the outside and have found discrepancies in terms of nicotine levels. They could be much higher. They could be lower. It's the much higher that's concerning because it can be toxic. Additionally, the CDC has, to Representative Albright's question, the CDC has released studies that show that rather than the harmless water vapor that we were initially told that was in these vapors, it's actually they found heavy metals in there. They found nicotine. They found antifreeze, diethylene glycol. They have found formaldehyde, numerous cancer-causing chemicals. So they're there. What that means for our health it remains to be seen, but I would suggest that we would probably not choose to ingest these on a regular basis if we knew what we were taking in. If we, you know, go ahead and here's your formaldehyde stick. And so more study needs to be done in terms of what the health effects are, but we do know that those chemicals exist in the e-cigarette vapor and in what the user is ingesting.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioner or Representative Halverson. We're all still learning about this, but my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's no standard manufacturing or no standard recipe, and that there actually may be manufacturers in Minnesota who come up with their own combination, or they may import it from other countries or elsewhere, and that there's that the part of the problem in establishing harm or no harm is that there's no standardization of the product, and so that makes it really difficult to do research. Is that a correct impression?
Representative Halverson?
Madam Chair, yes, it is a correct impression. It's true that there's no labeling standard. To the earlier point, there's no manufacturing standard currently. There is a fair amount of this product that comes from China, and knowing problems we've had with everything from pet food to nutritional supplements in terms of having harmful ingredients in addition to those. It's clear that the Chinese manufacturing process has harmed Americans in the past, I keep saying Wild West. I mean, we just don't know, and the consumer doesn't know. The consumer's being told that it's harmless, but the fact is the consumer doesn't know because we haven't regulated it.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Commissioner Ellinger, first question for you. Dr. Ellinger, you referenced the anniversary of the Surgeon General's warning, and we're talking about the Indoor Air Act. I'm wondering, through your research into this, with the studies you've reviewed, how many deaths have been linked to vaping?
Dr. Ellinger?
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, I don't believe that there have been any studies that have shown the number of deaths caused by vaping.
Okay.
One of the concerns is that the addiction, and we know that tobacco use has caused 400,000 deaths per year. So we want to limit the use of tobacco, and the use of e-cigarettes is one way that we think he will get children addicted to nicotine, with the concern that they will then become tobacco users, and which will continue to add to the death toll that tobacco takes in our society.
Representative Sir Watts.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Dr. Allier, how many studies have you read that have linked e-cigarettes to children beginning to smoke?
Dr. Ellinger.
Representative, Madam Chair, and Representative Zerwas, there is a concern. There are no studies that show a definite transfer of children to tobacco use. We have seen an increase in use of e-cigarettes by youth, a doubling in the last year. So we assume that those children will be addicted to, some of those children become addicted to nicotine. We don't know the numbers that will actually then become tobacco users, but that is one of the concerns, as we know that nicotine is one of the most addictive substances that we have, and breaking that addiction is very difficult.
Just two more questions, Madam Chair.
Senator Watts.
Thank you so much. We talked about the idea of the dangers around secondhand smoke in the Clean Air and Indoor Air Act. Have there been any studies to show that breathing in secondhand vapor has led to deaths, like the studies that show secondhand smoke has for cigarette smoke?
Dr. Ellinger.
Madam Chair, Representative Zerwas, there have not been those studies to show the risks or what kind of harms are caused by secondhand, because we haven't done those studies, but we do know that there is chemicals, as the representative has said, that have been shown in the vapor, in the air, and those are toxic substances that we know will cause risks to individuals if they are inhaled.
Representative Sir
West. I guess just a final comment. When the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act came forward, it was a lot of science behind the impact of smoking, a lot of science behind the impact of secondhand smoke, and the author of the bill and the good doctor have testified to how early we are in the process. And my concern is that this bill is putting the cart before the horse and trying to do something to prevent a problem we don't know we have. And so I'm just concerned that this is just moving too fast without any scientific basis behind it.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Dr. Ellinger, just following up on those questions, how long does it take, generally speaking, between the time that somebody uses a cancer-causing substance or is exposed until, say, they would get cancer from it?
Madam Chair, the couple of issues. One is we do know about the length of time that it takes to become addicted to nicotine, and we know that particularly for children, sometimes the studies have been mostly with cigarettes. Sometimes it can take just a few cigarettes to actually get people who are sensitive to it to become addicted. Once they're addicted, then they will use tobacco, and it's a difficult addiction to break. And we know that the cancer-causing problems with tobacco and the constituents of that take decades to show themselves. But that's why we are paying the price today of the tobacco use of 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that's where the concerns are.
So, Dr. Ellinger, as I'm kind of getting this and sort of responding to Representative Zerwas, I don't think there's a lot of argument about, nobody's arguing that we have the mountains of data that we have for tobacco. But I think that the real question is, what is the appropriate balance for us as a health committee to strike when there quite possibly are dangerous substances? Remember, nobody here is asking to ban these devices. Nobody is saying that adults can't use these devices in their homes, on the street, in their friends' homes, etc. This is about whether people who are not using it should be involuntarily exposed, and whether those people should be put at risk, and what that uncertainty means. Which way does it cut? So we don't have data showing this is safe. The evidence that we're hearing now, and we're going to hear more, is that there's not even consistent contents of these cartridges. So nobody can really say for sure what's in one versus another. And we're saying, should people who don't want to be exposed involuntarily when we don't know which way this thing cuts? I think that's kind of the point we're at. So is it better to say, well, this may be harmful, but let's just let everybody be exposed anyway because we can't prove it's harmful, or it may be safe, but is it terrible to restrict it from certain places even if it turns out to be safe? And for us as a health committee, I think that's the decision that we need to make around this issue. So with that, Representative Halverson, did you want to make any other comment or should we go on to
Thank Darby? You, Madam Chair. I could make a brief comment. Referencing the Surgeon General's report and looking back to when that was released in 1964 and what we've had to do since then, and I will tell you, I have an aunt who passed away last year, and at her funeral, she asked her daughter to implore people not to smoke and not to start smoking. She became addicted long before that Surgeon General's report was released. She became addicted when cigarettes were being marketed as safer, when doctors were endorsing cigarettes. She didn't have the evidence that we do today to know not to start smoking. And she had a lifelong addiction, and she walked around with an oxygen tank for a good part of the end of her life. And what this bill and what these regulatory policies attempt to do is to strike a balance so that we are ensuring that we're not going to addict a new generation of people. And also, I believe, to state clearly that although we don't know the extent of the harms, we do know enough to know that harm, that risk is there. We just don't know what it is. Breathing in formaldehyde, breathing in nicotine, breathing in antifreeze does come with it some inherent risk. And so we just don't know at this point how much. And I think that it behooves us to make sure that we give consumers as much information as possible before we'll, you know, just go gangbusters on it. So,
okay. So, Dr. Ellinger, any final word from you, and then we have other testifiers.
Your representative and members of the committee, certainly, as Representative Halverson has said, there was a long time before we had enough evidence of tobacco use and the harms that it caused. But as part of that, as we were gathering that information, tobacco use became embedded as part of the culture. And changing that culture is very difficult to overturn. And that's why it has taken us so long, despite the evidence that it's harmful, despite the fact that we know it causes 400,000 deaths a year. It is part of our culture, and changing that is very difficult. While we're trying to find out the safety of e-cigarettes, if it becomes inculcated, is embedded into our culture, it's going to be very difficult to overturn that once we do have data that would say that it is harmful to the health of our society.
Okay. Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Janelle Waldock. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm happy to be here today to testify in support of House Files 1931 and 1974. I'm Janelle Waldock. I'm the director of the Center for Prevention at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota. And I'm appearing before the committee today on behalf of a coalition of health organizations that support this legislation. They include the American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the American Lung Association, the Association of the Non-Smokers Minnesota, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota, Clearway Minnesota, the Minnesota Medical Association, and many others. I'm also a veteran of the fight to pass the Freedom to Breathe Act in 2007, and several of you around the table, Representative Huntley, certainly were leaders in making that happen. It can be hard to remember the controversy that once surrounded that law, or just how many years it took it to pass. The reason it's so hard to remember, I would argue, is that because today, the Freedom to Breathe Act is one of the most popular policies our state has ever passed. In fact, every survey conducted since 2007 has found it growing more popular, with the most recent poll just conducted last month showing that 87% of people in Minnesota approve of that law. That's a very strong nod of support from people throughout the state. Other studies demonstrate the positive impacts of the law. After its implementation, the University of Minnesota tested hospitality workers for tobacco-related carcinogens and found an 85% reduction. The Mayo Clinic also found a substantial decrease in heart attacks. Additional studies demonstrate decreases in secondhand smoke exposure, as well as more people, including smokers, voluntarily making their homes smoke-free. All these studies underscore why the Freedom to Breathe Act was a good idea in the first place. It's essential that we protect the integrity of the law and the clean air that Minnesotans have come to expect and support. In fact, Minnesotans overwhelmingly agree that e-cigarettes should be included in the law's language. In this recent poll, 79% of Minnesotans said that they support prohibiting e-cigarette use in places where smoking is already prohibited. An even larger number, 87%, support keeping e-cigarettes behind the counter in stores, which is a provision that Representative Halverson also includes in her bill. The legislature can correct this loophole by taking a common sense approach, supporting the legislation that is in front of you today. Our state has enjoyed clean indoor air for 7 years, and Minnesotans have responded. This is what they want. Let's not go backwards. Thank you for your consideration and your time today.
Thank you very much. Questions from members? Okay, not seeing any. Thank you very much. Okay, we have Pat McComb. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Pat McComb, and I am the Director of Tobacco Control Programs and Policy for the American Lung Association in Minnesota. And I, too, am a veteran, and I want to definitely thank our Representative Huntley for his leadership with Freedom to Breathe, because the dialogue around e-cigarettes and secondhand vapor and secondhand aerosol is very similar to the arguments made during that time. Similar, yet different. I had all kinds of written stuff that I was going to, but after the questions, I'm going to tell you from the heart. I brought an e-cigarette along. Some of your questions already came up, and I want to remind folks that the e-cigarette industry was originally being regulated by the FDA. The industry took the FDA to court to say, we are not a cessation device, and we do not want to be regulated as such. And they won that court case. So the warning on this e-cigarette says, these products are not smoking cessation products and have not been tested as such, period. I've taught smoking cessation for 20, 30 years, and I've had people swear to me that they've quit smoking by laser treatment, they've quit by hypnosis, they've quit by aromatherapy, but we base health on best practices and the science. I truly believe they quit smoking with aromatherapy, but it's not something we can support. As my grandson would say, I'd say to him, we have a situation. And he'd say, why do we have a situation, Grandma? And I'll tell you why. Because we have Hello Kitty being marketed. This is an e-cigarette with a Hello Kitty purchased in our community. And you want it, I think maybe you were smelling the e-juice that I brought along, the most popular flavor, lemon, blueberry, cotton candy. All right. We have a situation. We do have a situation. Addiction treatment is hard work, and it's not just as easy as this device or another. Somebody asked the question about, are there other things in these products? Just last week, and I won't reveal what county, but a sheriff, and he shared his things, said he had a person on probation come in, tested positive for meth. And the device for getting his meth was an e-cigarette. And he was asking his colleagues if this was something they were seeing. Right. So indeed, these are drug delivery systems. They are clever, they are attractive, and they are drug delivery systems. I also want to say that it is the Wild West out there. I dare you to try to read this label. We don't know what's in these. They're unregulated. They're marketed. They're mixed together in back rooms. You could mix one in your trunk of your car and sell this product. So we need the FDA to regulate that. In the meantime, we need to keep local control by the state setting a minimum health standard of exposure to these unknown chemicals. So most of the e-cigarette use in these shops are what are called the minor leagues. But in my long history with the tobacco industry, they are the major league hitters. These convicted racketeers are buying up and developing their own e-cigarette lines. I will repeat that. The tobacco industry are convicted racketeers, and they are marketing the future of nicotine addiction to my grandsons that say we have a situation. History is repeating itself. E-cigarette makers, large and small, are using the same tactics as the tobacco companies did generations ago. Sex in ads, cartoons, candy flavors, advertising on TV, getting celebrities, free samples, teaching you how to use the product to endorse them as e-cigarettes at events. All things known to appeal to kids and teens. There is a fact sheet in your packet showing the now and then ads. It's colorful. And I honestly wish we had put the ad in there of a woman who's older than me, which is pretty old.
Excuse me, sorry, I don't think we have that, members.
The packets?
If you have them, could you just hand them out? Thank you.
Great. Well, it is the now and then of advertising. And unfortunately, or fortunately, or probably as offensive as the most offensive was, a blue e-cigarette ad isn't on here, but it was an elderly woman giving us the finger saying, here's to you, smoking vans. That's what this is all about. It's renormalizing a behavior that, as Dr. Ellinger said, we denormalized. Do we want this back? Puffing away and our kids asking what's that and how cool it is? I don't think so. The jury is out on e-cigarettes, way out. As one cessation counselor said to me a few weeks ago, good thing these devices weren't around when I quit smoking because I never would have. Given all the things we know, let's put these simple, common sense restrictions on the use of these devices in public places. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from members? And the document she was discussing is just coming around. Okay, I do have a question. Ms. McCone,
yes.
I'm smelling the vapor, I think. Is that coming from what you have?
I don't know. There are people in here with devices. They have testified and used these devices in other communities and can stealth vape. So I can't assure you that it's whose vapor it is.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, let me just say again to anyone in the room who may be using one of these devices, it is against house rules to use that here. And so I would ask you again to please, if you are using one, to please desist, because I am very sensitive to scents, and I am definitely smelling that off and on here. So please don't use it here.
Lemon, blueberry, cotton candy.
Okay, thank you very much. Next testifier is Cap O'Rourke. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, members. My name is Cap O'Rourke, and for the record, I represent the independent vaping retailers of Minnesota. So this is an organization comprised not of big tobacco companies. My clients are retail shops and distributors based in Minnesota that deal with vaping products. Just a little information. So this is obviously a booming industry or growing fast. There have been over 200 shops that have applied for a license in Minnesota in various communities. There's a lot of disagreement about whether or not some cities give licenses or not. So there's definitely some area for added regulation. My clients support largely some of the regulation pieces that are in Senate File 1931, limiting to minors. My retail shops do not allow minors into their shop. They do not sell to minors, even products that are not currently banned. As far as products, a lot of the products that are used in Minnesota are actually made in Minnesota, and part of the reason of that is due to our current tax structure. We tax vaping products at an OTP rate of 95, wholesale rate of 95%. So financially, it's actually better to buy a product that is made in Minnesota as opposed to shipping it in from China or even other states. It's a cheaper product to have made and retailed in Minnesota. Most of the product, the groups that of my clients that actually create the product themselves rather than just retail it, the compounds that are in there are propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, and flavoring. There is studies out there that it's certainly sure that the we do not have nearly the knowledge and the scientific background about vaping and its health concerns that we did with cigarettes, but some of the studies that have been more recent and more comprehensive actually certainly show that they have a better health impact than cigarettes. And in fact, a number of them showed some very promising things for the overall health. I'm going to let one of our shop owners testify, Jesse Smith, here about his business.
It's Jesse Griffith.
Or Griffith, sorry.
But that's a pretty close name. Hi, I'm Jesse Griffith. I'm incredibly nervous, so forgive me.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And, could you...
Jesse Griffith, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H.
Thank you.
One of the things I wanted to say was that, with regard to the bill, that there's stuff in here that we certainly agree with in terms of making an effort to keep electronic cigarettes and vaping products out of the hands of minors. Currently in Minnesota, it is only it's only illegal if I sell you the product that contains nicotine. In other words, I could sell you an accessory such as a battery or another piece of a device if you're a minor. But I think what you would find if you came to our shop, as well as many of the other responsible retailers that exist in Minnesota, is that they would deny service to anyone. And in fact, if we see a minor walking through the doors, we're gonna reject them. As a parent, that's something that I'm concerned of as well. The other side of that we kind of talk about a lot is the whole idea of flavors and marketing to children. The reason I started my business is because I started vaping and using an electronic cigarette to switch off of cigarettes about a little bit over 4 years ago. And from my personal experience, if I don't know how many of you are current or former smokers, but cigarettes taste pretty terrible. They don't taste very good. And I think that part of the reason that we smoke them for so long with the flavor that they have is because we know that it kind of kills our taste buds. But to me, when I use an electronic cigarette flavor that tastes like a cigarette, and this doesn't go for everybody, but for most people, you find that people who stay with vaping, they transition to flavors that are unlike a cigarette. And so for me, if those flavors weren't there, I would be more likely to go back to cigarettes, and that's certainly not what I would like to do. To hit another point regarding this specific bill, we think that, and it was testified by Mrs. Halverson, that it would be left up to, that sampling would still be able to occur in shops where electronic cigarettes are sold, and that's only kind of half the truth, because what would happen is, the Clean Indoor Act has a provision that says, well, cities can go ahead and say you can allow sampling or not allow sampling. It leaves it up to the city. And so what you would have is basically a number of businesses like our own, which are kind of predicated on the idea that people trying to make a transition from cigarettes to vaping, we have to let them see what it's all about. Many of those shops would not be able to operate business the way that they currently do. It would represent a very fundamental change. And so we think it would be best left up to business owners. Mrs. Halverson described a number of businesses that have taken that kind of action, saying, we don't want this here. And we say, good, that's your right to say we don't want this here. And we're not going to put up a fuss about that, but we think that we should certainly have the ability to do it within our own businesses and let other businesses decide for themselves.
Okay, thank you. If I could just follow up on that point. So I'm sorry, I was distracted for just a second, but you're saying that you're concerned about allowing the sampling within the stores. Is that what you're...
Correct.
Okay, and I just wanted to ask Representative Halverson, does your bill prevent the sampling that he's talking about?
Madam Chair, it does not. It does not actually deal with sampling at all. The sampling exemption was written into the state's Clean Indoor Air Act, and this bill does not amend that at the state level. It does not preclude local governments from taking a different action, but at the state level, we make no changes at all.
Okay, so Representative Halverson, if your bill was to become law in its entirety, his customers can still come in and try out a device if they're adults, correct?
Madam Chair, if his customers are allowed to sample the devices in his store today, they would be allowed to sample the devices after the passage and enactment of this bill.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anything further or any other questions?
I would just like to, on the health piece, it is true that we do not have the amount of studies that we did with cigarettes, but there have been some recent studies that have been some fairly eye-opening conclusions. One of them was done recently in Drexel, and I can provide these studies to all of you. And their conclusion was analysis of the current state of knowledge about chemistry of liquids and aerosols associated with e-cigarettes indicate that there is no evidence that vaping produces inhalable exposures to contaminants of the aerosol that would warrant health concerns by the standards that are used to ensure safety of consumers. There are a number of other smaller studies that show, you know, how the nicotine is ingested, how you get nicotine from a vapor as opposed to, like, for example, Nicotrol, which is an FDA-approved cessation device. It's the exact same way that you get the nicotine. You inhale it. There's no difference in the way your body absorbs those two items. And finally, I think I would leave you with the comments of, before we go, I know there's some consumers here that want to speak as well. Charles Connor, who was a past president and CEO of the Lung Association, he said that he tried all his life to get his mother off smoking without success. I just buried her in December due to the failure of her lungs, undoubtedly due to cigarettes. I am deeply committed to eliminating tobacco cigarettes from the American scene. The smoking rate did go down a lot, but it has plateaued around 20%. So that's been a great frustration to the public health organizations. Might not these e-cigarettes and vaping be the things that get America off cigarettes? E-cigarettes are not necessarily health products, but they are sure a lot safer than a tobacco cigarette, and even opponents say that. If FDA's overall job is to regulate the tobacco industry with a view towards reducing its consumption and reducing the number of deaths, I think they need to take a look into consideration the role the e-cigarettes might play in doing that. My clients understand that the FDA has been looking to regulate that, and in some instances, there's been trickles of information coming about how the FDA may regulate creating some of these liquids. And a lot of my clients have been trying to keep up with that and keep up those standards before those regulations come out. You can't make the FDA move any faster than it currently is, apparently.
Okay. I have a question from Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Mr. O'Rourke?
Yep.
I'm trying to get my hands around in terms of the size of your industry in the state of Minnesota, in terms of could you give me some factual information from the perspective of the number of stores or enterprises that are out there, and from an industry perspective, I'm sure you probably cataloged or started to collect data in terms of what type of revenue on an annualized basis your industry creates in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Albright, I would love to be able to give you some of that stuff, and I will work with to get you that information. This industry is extremely new, and they are still kind of creating coalitions as we speak. The best knowledge that I have as far as a number of what we have in the state is the number of there are 200 vaping licenses, according to, there have been 200 vaping licenses applied for within the state of Minnesota. But we are not sure of total revenue of those shops, and if they're all just vaping shops, if some are gas stations and retail stores, or they run the gamut of kind of where they all are. So we're trying to get that, add to that information. I can tell you, as just a practical note as far as dollars, a bottle of e-liquid, if you are a pack-a-day user, should last you a month.
It depends on the amount, but on average.
Yeah, we have to do this in a formal way. Sorry, Mr. Griffin, go ahead. Speaking of the mic, please.
Well, so in general, there's a bunch of different styles of devices, and some are meant to produce more vapor, but give you less nicotine concentration in that vapor, if that makes sense. But for kind of what a regular starter kit would be, usually a pack-a-day smoker is going to go through a bottle that costs $20 in roughly somewhere between 20 days and 30 days, if that makes sense. So if that user were spending, let's see, if a pack of cigarettes were they're about $657 now, so $210. That person's budget is now in the $20 to $30 range. I don't know if that answers your question.
Representative Albright.
No. So, are you required to apply for and receive a separate license to sell e-cigarettes?
Yes, that's correct.
Mr. Griffin, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's correct. We are by this Minnesota Revenue. And there is some confusion within cities currently whether or not they're supposed to issue a dedicated vapor product retailer a license. But if you go to the Minnesota Revenue website, it's pretty clear that it says they shall issue. So yes, we have licenses in every municipality in which we operate.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When was the first, and this may be for the Commissioner, I'm not sure if you can answer this, Mr. Rourke, but when was the first license issued?
Mr. Rourke, can you answer that? No.
Okay. I cannot answer that.
Okay. I don't know if anybody here is.
Madam Chair, maybe just.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Suffice to say, the industry itself is in its infancy. Would that be correct? I mean, it's pretty clear you don't have the numbers to provide in terms
without
of revenue
having
or taxes.
Tax
provided on your product.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, I would. From my conversations with my clients, I would suspect that at least 80% of the shops that have opened in Minnesota have opened within the last 12 months. People are quickly choosing this product over cigarettes, and that is driving a lot of the boom in new shops opening.
Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. O'Rourke, you said that there's about 200 independent vapor retailers that you represent. And could you tell me if you have knowledge of how many are actually creating their own liquid? How many manufacturers do we have in Minnesota?
Mr. O'Rourke.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, let me just clarify that. We have heard from the Department of Revenue that there have been over 200 licenses applied to. They are not all my clients. Some of them may be other types of shops and businesses. I am not sure exactly how many manufacturers we have, because there are manufacturers that create these products and then distribute them to retail shops, and then there are some that have a retail shop and they manufacture within. So they kind of have different levels of, and they may, those same shops that create product for their own shops may also distribute to other shops as well. So I don't have a handle on exactly how many we have that manufactured in Minnesota.
Representative Loeffler.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rourke, do you have, can you give us some information about, or how we could obtain information about the manufacturing facilities that are putting this together? Are they done in commercial kitchens? Are they in laboratories? I think, you know, we, as a health committee, deal with a lot of licensing of food issues and sanitation practices, just because food outbreaks and other illness outbreaks are a concern to us and increase our healthcare costs. But can you tell us something about the manufacturing, and is there anyone who keeps track of who those are, who licenses them, so that we could get some knowledge about that part of this business?
Mr. O'Rourke.
Madam Chair, Representative Walker, I do not believe, I have seen some of the manufacturing locations, a handful, just in quick tours. There is not a defined set of standards. The shops that I represent all have a separate room, a separate area that they maintain at certain levels, and a lot of them have been trying before the FDA comes out with regulations. There has been some I don't say leaks, maybe the suggestions of how they may want to regulate the rooms in which they're the manufacturing, and so a lot of my clients have been trying to keep up with those levels, thinking that that is the impending kind of standard that's coming. But right now, there is no one that checks that, and there's no regulations for the shops to adhere to.
Well, Madam
okay,
Chair, I think
Representative Loeffler.
Just a concluding comment. We've had some real issues in this state with people with compounding pharmacies getting mold and other things that have actually caused long-term serious health problems for people, and this is an area that I have some real concerns about.
Thank you. Okay. And just before I go to Representative Johnson, who has a question, just want to let folks know this hearing is supposed to end at 3:45. At that time, we're going to recess. Just so people know, we're going to come back, we hope, at 6:30 this evening. We have to finish this bill. We have other bills on our agenda. The DFLers are going to be caucusing before that, so I'm just kind of giving everybody it'll be 6:30 or call of the chair, and we'll try to keep Representative Mack for sure in the loop so that, you know, we don't go too late and keep everybody on the hook, but I just want to kind of lay that out before we conclude. Representative Johnson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. O'Rourke, just a couple of comments you made that I want to follow up on. One is, a couple of minutes ago, you identified that there can be health benefits from using these products. Can you identify what those are?
Mr. O'Rourke.
Representative Johnson, Madam Chair, if I said there may have been benefits, I may have been citing some of the studies that have said that the nicotine levels in your blood go up at a different rate when you use an e-cigarette or vapor as compared to a regular cigarette. So if you are currently a smoker and you use cigarettes, your blood nicotine level will spike upon using a cigarette, and it does two things. And then when you use an e-cigarette, it does not barely spikes or barely goes up at all from your normal level. And one of the things that does is it reduces the kind of urge to smoke again. But I want to be clear and on the record, and I am not saying that e-cigarettes are a healthy, that they're not going to make you fit and slim and or do anything like that. I think a lot of our clients, customers, have chosen to use e-cigarettes and compared to use vaping and compared to cigarettes, but this is not something that I'm promoting as a healthy thing.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
And then the whole topic of choosing e-cigarettes over what I would call regular cigarettes, how do we know that people are choosing e-cigarettes as a substitute for cigarette smoking?
I will wait until further testifiers who I think will make that point.
Okay. All right. I have a couple just real quick questions for these two testifiers before we finish here. So, Mr. Griffith, you mentioned about you and your folks in your industry being careful about sales to minors. I just wonder, do you card people, or how do you know they're a minor? Could you tell us that?
Yes. So we do card. And that's usually when you apply for a tobacco license at one of these municipalities, they're going to send out sting officers to make sure that you're doing what you said you're going to do. And so it's important that we, you know, have a training program with our employees to make sure that they're carding, to make sure that it doesn't get into the hands of minors.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. And then for Mr. O'Rourke, so you're talking about studies about what comes, what goes into a person who's vaping, but, you know, I think we're kind of interested here in what comes out that other people might have to breathe. And I just want to ask you, are you telling us that there's no nicotine in the vapor? Or did I may have missed that, but is there nicotine or can there be nicotine in what is exhaled or what comes otherwise out of the device, Mr. O'Rourke?
Madam Chair, and I have been reading study after study after study for the last probably week and a half, and I'll have to get back to you on that because I'm not sure if I can remember if they've said the levels of if there's nicotine in the vaping or not. I have not seen a study that says there are harmful levels of contaminants in the vaping. I haven't seen anything like that.
Okay, and Representative Halverson wants to comment on that.
Madam Chair, to your question, the CDC issued a report that said that indeed they did find nicotine in the vapor. So, to your question, that's what.
Okay,
we know.
All right, thank you very much, testifiers. We have Mr. Bryant, and I'm sure that in the next 10 minutes we're probably going to not finish up, so I'm going to have to ask the other testifiers to hang around for this evening. Representative Halverson, did you have a comment?
Madam Chair, if I could just, as this testifier is getting settled, if I wanted to just make a point to Representative Albright's questioning about the businesses and just recognize that this bill has additional stops and government operations and commerce will be those stops. And so that I think those were really great questions about the businesses and the business impacts. And the intention of this bill is not to interfere with adults buying these products. It's not about the current customers, if you will. It's about the emerging customers and the new customers, which are children.
So. Okay, thank you, Representative Halverson. And also, members, I'm not sure if I actually moved the bill, so I'm going to do that now. So I'm going to move that House File 1931 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations, just in case there's any doubt about where it's going next. Okay, I'll get that out of the way. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Tom Bryant, and I am the Executive Director of two different trade associations. One is the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association, and that's a group of tobacco wholesalers located around the state. The other is the National Association of Tobacco Outlets, which is a national trade association for retail stores that sell tobacco products, more traditional tobacco stores, convenience stores, gas stations. The associations I represent do not oppose certain sections of House File 1931 that deal with, for example, the prohibition on the sale of e-cigarettes to minors, doing the compliance checks, including e-cigarettes as a part of the licensing. We're familiar with those. Our retailers comply with those regulations already on all other levels of the tobacco products, so that is not a concern of ours. Retailers have taken significant steps to make sure that tobacco products don't get in the hands of minors. And so we don't have those same concerns with those provisions of Section 1931. There is one provision, though, and there's been a lot of testimony, so I'm going to try and be brief, that we want to share our concerns with you. And that is about the section that would change the definition of smoking under the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act and not allow the use of e-cigarettes in many public places, bars, restaurants, bowling alleys, taverns, etc. Last week, Charles Connor, he's a former president of the American Lung Association, who is now a consultant to an electronic industry tobacco trade association group, wrote an article about e-cigarettes and about the city of Los Angeles. They're considering doing the same thing that you're considering now, is not allow them in public places. And I thought my concerns parallel his. And given his prior experience as the president of the American Lung Association, I thought I'd just read several excerpts from his article, and I have those to hand out here as well. He says, a proposed ordinance being considered by the Los Angeles City Council would impose restrictions on e-cigarette use in public places. Such restrictions make sense for traditional tobacco products. But this proposal is misguided because it would do a public health disservice discouraging smokers from switching to less harmful electronic cigarettes that do not combust tobacco and therefore do not create secondhand smoke. E-cigarettes may deliver nicotine and look like cigarettes, but the similarities end there. Combustion of tobacco has long been recognized by the public health community as the real danger of a conventional cigarette. The lesson is crystal clear. Different products require different regulations. We have a good understanding of the contents of an electronic cigarette and the vapor it produces. Scientific research continues, but to date appears to indicate that the harm from e-cigarette vapor is minimal and negligible compared with smoke from conventional cigarettes. Including e-cigarettes in the city's smoking ban would be a step in the wrong direction. It would send the unintended message to smokers that electronic cigarettes are as dangerous as traditional cigarettes, locking many smokers into traditional cigarette use. This is a public health outcome we do not want. The Food and Drug Administration will soon begin developing a policy to regulate but not ban electronic cigarettes. Comments from federal officials point toward a policy that will treat cigarettes, e-cigarettes, as separate and distinct from conventional cigarettes. In short, members, we agree with Mr. Connor that it's somewhat premature to ban the use of e-cigarettes in public places. There's been a lot of discussion here today about the FDA. The FDA has a Center of Tobacco Products. It was created in 2009. The director of that Center for Tobacco Products is Mitch Zeller. About 2 months ago, he announced the creation of 14 tobacco research centers for the FDA, and they funded it for the first year with $53 million to do the research on tobacco products, and he specifically referred to research on e-cigarettes. What's contained in the liquid? What's contained in the vapor? Do there have to be good manufacturing practices, etc.? And he said sound public policy has to wait until the science is done. You need the scientific research in order to make good public policy, because you have to do it the right way. So I would defer to Mr. Zeller and to the FDA, let the experts do the research, let them come to the conclusions they do based on the research, and then make sound public policy. That's what this legislative body did with the Clean Indoor Air Act. The studies were done, and the policy was adopted based on those studies. It's like one of the representatives said, it's putting the cart before the horse. So we would encourage you to let that scientific research continue. It is continuing as of now and will with the FDA, and let that be concluded before a decision is made. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Mr. Bryant, I would ask you what I asked Mr. O'Rourke. Is there nicotine emitted in the vapor? Can it be emitted in the vapor?
Madam Chair, I've read one study where they have detected very minimal amounts of nicotine in the vapor, along with a lot of water vapor. Most of the vapor is water vapor, but there may be trace amounts of nicotine. I've read that in one study, yes.
So, Mr. Work, Mr. Bryant, I guess you think that, let me just ask you, is it okay with you then to expose people who are not voluntarily exposing themselves, but simply are indoors in a public place, is it okay for them to be breathing traces of nicotine without knowing it, simply because other people are just, we're balancing interests here, we're balancing rights, there's no question about it. But is my right as a non-smoker, as a non-user of nicotine, less important than somebody else's right to be vaping wherever they want to be when they can go outside and vape?
Madam Chair, you have to look at traditional cigarettes, which are burned, and e-cigarettes, which just heat the liquid and create the vapor. As Mr. O'Connor stated, the true health impact of smoking traditional cigarettes comes from burning the tobacco. It creates the tar and all the chemicals that create health problems. In an electronic cigarette, there is a battery. It heats the liquid nicotine and then gives you a vapor. The trace amounts that the study referred to also indicated that there should be no harmful health issues because of that trace nicotine in the vapor if it's there. And I'll be glad to send all the members of the committee the study. It was done through the Drexel University. It was mentioned earlier. And they came to the conclusion it's not harmful for others because the trace amount is so negligible. If it was significantly higher, there may be a health impact, but not based on the study's conclusions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Well, obviously, we're not here to convince each other. Let's see. I would just say that you know, nicotine, as Dr. Ellinger testified, is a highly addictive substance. And we've heard testimony here today that there isn't a lot of quality control around what's in the various canisters that are vaped. And so I think it's, I would just say that from my point of view, to have people, myself as a non-smoker, it's one thing to compare smoking to these products. And, I don't think we're here to argue that. It's about whether these products should be allowed to be used indoors in places where smoking is not. And I think that as long as people are being involuntarily subjected to the vapor, if it has a highly addictive substance in it, to me that is a problem. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, in your testimony you described the content of the vapor itself, and I'm wondering if we can have a conversation or answer about is there a regulatory, as we would compare other either secondhand smoke, whether that be from cigarettes or others, and let's just deal with regular smokes. Is there a threshold of nicotine per million parts or billion parts that is a basis for discerning a cause and effect causation for cancer in regular cigarettes? And would there be any study or factual evidence on the books already about e-cigarettes that would be along those same lines?
Mr. Bryant.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, not being a scientist, I would have to defer that to the FDA studies. They are right now studying e-cigarettes, the vapor that comes out of them. That's what these tobacco research centers are supposed to be doing, and they'll develop the answers that you're seeking. I don't know myself. That's got to come through scientific study. There has been one study, the Drexel study, which I'll provide to you, which said there was some nicotine in the vapor, but not at a harmful level.
Okay, members, we have reached the end of our time. Now, I just want to remind members that it is my intention to remove Section 1, so I want to let the audience know that. So we're not going to vote to pass or to pass along Section 1. At the end of the hearing, I don't know if that will influence anybody's decision about whether to come back this evening. Representative Zerwas?
Madam Chair, I was just going to make the suggestion that you let the audience know what Section 1 is. They may not be clear
okay. What
the text
right.
of it is, just so we're as clear as possible.
Okay, thank you, Representative Zerwas. Appreciate that. So Section 1 of the bill is the section that adds e-cigarettes to the Clean Indoor Air Act. So that is the section that we are not intending to move today. So just so the audience is aware, does that help, Representative Zerwas? Okay. And so, members, we're going to be in recess until 6:30 or the call of the chair. And we will return to this room at that time. So thank you. We stand in recess. All right. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to call the committee back to order and apologize for the late reconvening here. The DFL members had caucus, and we just finished. So apologize for that. I want to call up, we had some other testifiers who were on the list to testify on House File 1931. Are they still here? We had Benny Muhammad. Okay, sir, please come up to the table. Then we've got Jesse Ray, Paul Allen, Ryan Abbott, and Chris Tipton. And if any of you are in the room, please kind of line up, and we're going to give everybody a chance to testify on the bill. And members, just for the public, after we get done with this bill, I expect that the rest of our agenda, although we have several other bills, I expect that we will zip through them pretty quickly. So welcome to the committee. Please give us your name and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
My name is Benny Muhammad. I'm also a shop owner. I own the E-Cig Lounge in St. Cloud, Wade Park area, with District 14A and or District 6, but the House and Senate 14A. I just want to share a little bit over the discussions that were discussed earlier. I want to say thank you for having us all here. We appreciate that. So thank you very much for giving us the opportunity. As a shop owner and a vapor, because I do vape, I'm an ex-cigarette smoker, started at 15, About a pack and a half a day. No longer a cigarette smoker. Got early introduced to vaping through some friends that started vaping and eventually started a company that that I had showed interest in over the years, about 4 or 5 years ago. So that's how I became a shop owner. Let's see. I just wanted to share a little bit about our shop and the shops that are here right now. We do have a community of shop owners that work together with integrity and character. So there was a lot of stuff discussed about how the liquids are made and this and that. And being open, I've been open for a little over 6 months. And since I've been open, I've had 4 senators in my shop and our House seat representative, Tama Tice. I'm also a chamber member of the St. Cloud, Sauk Rapids, and Wake Park Chamber. Very active in my community, and I continue to want to still do that. I'm a little nervous, so excuse me. I'm not good like this at all sometimes. So. Anyways, as a shop owner and a vapor, I've got a lot of passion with this, so it's very important to me, and I've seen a lot of lives change over it. And in that process, giving back to the community is a huge thing. So my wife and another business partner that are involved, we take that very serious on how we distribute our liquids and the sampling of it and everything. And actually, you were talking to Jesse earlier, and one of his juice lines is one of the ones that we carry, one of his e-liquid lines. And they're all done in a clean room environment. And the bottles are labeled, and it is very consistent on what's done. Another e-liquid that I carry is manufactured and certified by AIMSA, which is close to FDA approved. So everyone's carded when they come in the door. Zero nicotine in our testing stations. We offer live entertainment, college and military discounts. I also do a lot for the military. We do a lot of freedom flight stuff for the freedom fighters and certain events. So we offer a lot of community work together. So I just want to say that it's not a bad thing. You know, it's really important that people get educated with the people that come into our facility. We can spend an hour with them when they walk in the door, you know, to get the right type of education, because there's a lot of questions. It's a new thing. So anything that's new and someone that's trying to change their life around to maybe see something else, or they've been pushed in the door a little bit by a loved one, or a loved one that's a non-smoker that comes in, trust what we do enough to walk in while there's some vaping going on. So, because they're getting something for a loved one. So changes a lot of views on things once people get a first opportunity to come into a place like that and take a look. And I don't know how many of you guys have ever been into a vape shop, but I suggest strongly that you guys actually go check out a few of them and see how the service is, you know, because we're not doing anything wrong, you know. We're doing things the best way we can, you know, and try to educate. It's important to educate, you know, and stand by our products. So, I mean, so if there's any questions, I would like to answer them. It might be a little easier for me to answer some of the questions.
Okay, well, Mr. Muhammad, we appreciate you being here tonight, and I just want to assure you that, you know, nobody on this committee thinks that somebody like you is a bad person or that you're doing, you know, that you're bad. This isn't about banning e-cigarettes.
Right.
I think we heard that before. It's really about, this is a health committee. And so our interest here is protecting the health of Minnesotans. So we do appreciate you being here. Are there any questions from members? Okay, not seeing any. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay. Jesse Ray. Okay. I'm not seeing Jesse Ray. Okay. Paul Allen. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'm terrified, so please forgive me if I stutter, stumble, or pass out.
We've got some nurses in the room.
So I come to you today to essentially represent myself. Now, it was made very clear before the break that the parts that were most disturbing about 1931, primarily Section 1, is being removed, and if we were satisfied with that, we need not come back. I felt obligated to come back because I don't think that proper information was conveyed through the first half of the group. Specifically, the polls that say 79% of the people want e-cigarettes included in this, and 87% of the people polled are in favor of whatever they're in favor of. The bottom line is, as I look at that study from Clearway, there were 630 people that were polled. Now, if you do the math on 5.312 million people that live in Minnesota, that's actually less than 1/100th of 1% of Minnesota. Is that really an accurate representation of what all of Minnesota really thinks? So I ask you to question that. I am 41 years old. I smoked cigarettes for 28 years, which means most of my life was spent on one side of a cigarette or another. I have not had a tobacco cigarette in 8 months. First time ever. I tried nearly every quit attempt you can imagine, and all ended the same way in pure and utter failure. I'm not going to claim that e-cigarettes are a cessation device, but the fact that I have not had a cigarette in 8 months, it's one hell of a side effect. So I will make myself available for any questions that you may have. I thank you for your time.
Mr. Allen, thank you so much for sticking around, and we appreciate your testimony today. Just on the topic of polls, I don't know the merits of Clearway's poll. I haven't dug into it, but a poll is always going to be a small sample of a much larger group, and hopefully if it's done right, it's a scientifically drawn sample so that you can draw a conclusion about the larger group from it. So it's a scientifically done thing. Again, I'm not vouching for how good this one is. Obviously, polls can be done in different ways, sometimes quite badly and inaccurately, but I just wanted to say that picking a smaller number out of a big pool doesn't in itself invalidate a poll.
I agree, and the operative word in your statement is if, and I totally support that.
Okay, any questions for members? All right, not seeing any. Thank you very much for sticking around.
Thank you.
Ryan Abbott. Welcome
same note,
to the committee.
Kind of, thank you. Same note, I'm a little shaken, but I guess it's...
Don't be nervous. We won't bite you.
Okay.
just introduce yourself. Just give us your name for the record, because we're taping.
No worries. I'm Ryan Abbott. I am a ex-smoker, vapor, and soon-to-be shop owner myself. Previously, I was 5 years with Philip Morris and did logistics and also marketing for their e-cigarette line, but wasn't really a huge fan of the big tobacco, so I just decided to come into the e-cig world and just find the knowledge and open up my couple of shops and things, so see how that goes and everything. But I had my first cigarette when I was 11 years old, just stressful day at, you know, that I could find something to calm the nerves, and being 11 years old, really stupid, didn't know what I was getting into, and, well, you know, 27 now, 16 years later, haven't had a cigarette in probably a year and a half now, I want to say. But just the knowledge that's, you know, this is a health committee. I get that. I understand that. That's why I'm sharing my story, because I love, you know, the thought that you don't have to wake up every morning feeling so drowsy. You don't have to have that smell of, you know, tar and leaving on your clothes every single day. And, you know, I'm sleeping better. You know, this is my unit. That's what I use. There is so much education behind that that you can use to, you know, how much vape you're getting, how much flavor you're going to have. I use 0% nicotine. I haven't used nicotine in about 4 months now, and I love it. I do it for the flavor, just the experience of it. It's a great, you know, social talk, but I don't know. To be honest with you, some of the things that were said earlier is kind of, I still question, but I'll leave that to some of the other people. So, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sticking around, and thanks for getting over your jitters and testifying.
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much. Chris Tipton. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I feel like we have a lot of first-timers here. Good thing, yeah. All right, so I just wanted to share a little bit about myself and my personal experience. Okay, first of all, my name is Chris Tipton. I was a pack-a-day smoker of traditional tobacco cigarettes for about 10 years, and I have been smoke-free for over 3 years thanks to electronic cigarettes. Using an electronic cigarette has been a huge positive in my life. When I was regularly smoking tobacco cigarettes, I could feel the damage that I was doing to my body. I would wake up almost every morning with a terrible coughing spell. Sometimes these spells would take over an hour to pass. When I would eat, food didn't taste the way it was supposed to. Every taste was dulled down, muted, it just was off. In addition, let's face it, cigarettes stink. And this smell would linger on me, my clothes, in my car, and even in my home, even though I didn't smoke in my house. But all of this changed when I started using electronic cigarettes. My cough is completely gone, except for right now, because I have a bit of a cold. Sorry. But my doctor has even told me that my lung function has returned to the level of a non-smoker since I've switched to an electronic cigarette. Food tastes the way it's supposed to again, and the tobacco stink is obviously gone. And since I've made the switch, I've helped several of my friends and family members do the same. All of them have experienced similar results. I'm happy to call myself a smoke-free person, but it wasn't easy to get to this point. I had tried to quit several times before, using the more traditional methods, but I never had any success. I'm absolutely certain that I would still be smoking cigarettes today if it wasn't for electronic cigarettes. Since making this change for myself, I've also cared more about my health in general. I've started eating better. I've started drinking more water and just generally being a healthier person because I didn't have that attitude that, well, I'm killing myself anyway because I'm smoking cigarettes. So it's been a huge positive in that respect. Bit of a more personal note here. In addition to the health changes, just last year I also got engaged to my lovely fiance, Alyssa. And Alyssa has told me on several occasions that she would have never started even dating me if I was still smoking cigarettes. And I can't blame her. I mean, seriously, would you want to be with somebody who is addicted to something so toxic that even being around it could shorten your life? So I just want to say I am proof that electronic cigarettes are a good thing, a great thing, and without them I would still be smoking cigarettes, I would be much less healthy, and I probably wouldn't have a wedding coming up in 3 months. Now, I've heard some of the arguments made from some of the other people this afternoon, and it just seems to me that a lot of those arguments are flawed. I mean, we've heard that there's not enough studies to know if they're safe or unsafe, and it seems like this just isn't true. There are several studies available for those who aren't afraid of the results. You can check out mnvapors.com or CASA.org, that's CASAA.org, and learn more about the studies that have been done. And somebody brought up this study earlier, but it's the most comprehensive study done to date on electronic cigarettes, and it was done by Drexel University. And it concludes that electronic cigarettes pose no health concern for users or bystanders. And it also says that everything that you exhale when you are using an electronic cigarette it, like, any chemicals that are released are far below the workplace standard for any of those. So it is not causing problems for anybody in the room when somebody is using an electronic cigarette. Another argument that we've heard before is that they could be a gateway to using traditional cigarettes, and actually, as we've heard from a couple other people and myself, they're a gateway away from them. We've heard that they're marketing to children. I mean, if making candy flavors means that they're marketing to children, then it seems like somebody better let some other industries know. For example, there's a vodka company that makes flavors like cake and candy bar, and nobody's going after them.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. A what company?
There's a vodka company.
A vodka company.
Yes.
Thank you.
I personally use some of those sweet flavors because I like them, and they don't remind me of a cigarette, and it keeps me away from the tobacco cigarettes. So I believe we should be encouraging people to make the switch to electronic cigarettes so more people can experience the benefits that my friends, family members, and I have had. We shouldn't be banning something even indoors when the studies are concluding that it poses no risk to users or bystanders. And an indoor use ban on electronic cigarettes sends the signal that they are just as bad for people as tobacco cigarettes, because we're treating them the exact same. This will discourage others from making the switch to this healthier alternative. Allowing indoor vaping with obvious permission from the business owner gives more motivation to smokers to start using electronic cigarettes so they won't be forced outside in these wonderfully harsh Minnesota winters. In addition, somebody else brought this up, so I'll just cover it really briefly. An indoor use ban could seriously hurt a vape shop's ability to do business effectively if their particular municipality has a problem with it. They need to be able to demonstrate their products because most smokers don't want to go in and just drop, you know, upwards of $70, maybe $100 on something that they don't know if they're going to like or if it's going to work for them. And in conclusion, I just want to reiterate that vaping is not smoking, and vapers are not smokers. We are ex-smokers, and we shouldn't be pushed outside into situations where we have to inhale other people's secondhand smoke, because we made this switch because we wanted to be healthier. We don't want to be pushed outside where we're going to be inhaling those harmful chemicals that we successfully got away from. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Representative Benson, excuse me, but we can't have any demonstrations in the room. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick couple of questions, Mr. Tipton.
Sure.
Do you, other than the issue of whether or not this practice would be banned indoors, are there other areas of this particular bill that you object to? And I'm curious especially about the question of regulation of content of the products or the chemicals that go in to these alternative devices. Are you comfortable not knowing what chemical may be in that item that you're using?
Mr. Gibson?
I just want to say that I have established a good relationship with the companies that I purchase my products from, and each of the companies that I buy from, they do label their bottles and they label what ingredients are going into them. So I am very comfortable with the fact that I do know what I'm putting into my own body, and the studies that I have read on the subject have not turned in anything conclusive that says that there's something harmful, at least not something harmful at a level that would be of concern. And to answer your previous question, my main concern with House File 1931 is the indoor smoking ban. I'm completely in favor of making sure that we're not selling these devices to minors and making people check IDs and all of that stuff. That's good. I don't think that it's appropriate for an indoor use ban.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up, and I'm done.
Ms.
Tipton, even though you may be confident, are you confident that the general public is protected from those who may be selling these products that you do not have in contact with? That's the issue for me. Even supposedly. Medicines or tobacco products, supposedly, we have an understanding of what is in those. Do you feel comfortable simply allowing individual producers to make these as they choose, even if you happen to know, in your particular case, that the product you're using is safe?
Mr. Tipton.
I will just say that from the research that I've done on these products, I have never come across one that was definitively saying that there are like reproducible results where there is harmful chemicals in these products that people are ingesting. At least, like I said before, not in levels higher than trace amounts, which aren't even to the level of being concerning. So, I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea to, have some regulation as far as like what you're allowed to put in and not put in these products, because there are ingredients that you could potentially use that aren't going to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
But from the research I've done, the companies just aren't doing that right now. And when you do find out that a product is unsafe, then companies don't use those ingredients anymore.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Benson. Okay. Are there other questions for this witness? Okay. Not seeing any. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thanks for sticking around.
Thank you all very much for allowing me the time.
Okay. I'd now like to see if there's anyone else who'd like to testify on the bill. Please. Oh, we got one more over here. Well, this lady, please come down, and then we'll have this gentleman over here. Okay, please give us your name and.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very much. I'm sorry I couldn't join you earlier this afternoon. My name is Ann Joseph, and I am a physician investigator and professor of medicine at the University of Minnesota Medical School. I'm also past president of the Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco, which is the world's leading organization for research on nicotine. I'm here to lend strong support to House Files 1931 and 1974. E-cigarettes have only been available in the United States since 2007. Therefore, there have only been a few years to develop a scientific knowledge base about e-cigarettes and their effects. Since the products are unregulated and rapidly changing, the existing evidence is far from conclusive, and many, many important research questions remain. So there are many reasons, I think, to be very cautious. Advocates say they are harmless, but we simply don't have the information to support that claim today. Initial studies confirm that there are heavy metals, nicotine, carcinogens, and other toxic compounds in the vapor, but they are in lower concentrations than combusted cigarettes. There have been no long-term studies of electronic cigarettes, so we do not yet know the lasting effects on users or those who are exposed to secondhand vapor. This is the most important thing. We don't yet know the effect of electronic cigarettes on regular cigarette use. Recent data confirm that the majority of e-cigarette users are dual users, meaning that they use both electronic cigarettes and combustible tobacco products that we know are deadly. I do congratulate the individuals here who have stopped using regular cigarettes. That's terrific. I'm a physician, and I fight for that every day in my practice. But so far, there are insufficient conclusive data to show that e-cigarettes are effective for quitting. There are two peer-reviewed randomized controlled trials in the literature, and they do not suggest that they are effective. The FDA has not approved e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, and there are no best practices or treatment protocols to use them to help smokers quit. Another concern is the investment the tobacco industry has made in e-cigarettes. This is worrisome because we know they do have zero interest in moving smokers away from nicotine. Nicotine, which is common to both e-cigarettes and deadly tobacco, is an addictive drug. E-cigarettes, particularly the new designs, may perpetuate nicotine dependence or establish it in non-smokers. Just as a reminder, e-cigarettes are not regulated as a tobacco product, and they are not regulated as a medication. This loophole means that the law does not require disclosure of ingredients, and it's not possible to know what chemicals individual e-cigarette liquids contain or the amounts. Manufacturers are often small operations with no oversight or public accountability. The potential for accidents is high. In 2013, the Hennepin Regional Poison Center saw an 8-fold increase in calls related to e-cigarette use, and half of these were in regard to children less than 5 years old. These numbers are mirrored in national statistics. A great concern about e-cigarettes is their potential appeal to youth. We've talked about the flavors like cotton candy and others, and research shows flavored tobacco has a strong appeal for children and teens. E-cigarette use by kids has risen. A CDC study found that use by teenagers more than doubled just between 2011 and 2012. We do have to remember the big picture. You've probably heard recently about the 50th anniversary of the Surgeon General's report on smoking. It has taken at least 50 years to bring the smoking rate down from 42% nationwide to 18% nationwide, now 16% in Minnesota. Science shows that smoking cessation and restricting smoking in public played a large part in that success. This has resulted in dramatic decreases in heart disease, COPD, and lung cancer, among the deadliest of cancers. The reduction in smoking-related disease is one of the major public health accomplishments of our time. We don't know yet if e-cigarettes will help or threaten that remarkable progress, but until we know they help, we can't afford the risk of lowering quit rates or prolonging smoking. And that's why I strongly support these proposals. I'd like to make one additional comment because I understand from this afternoon and just recently have heard some reference to the Drexel study. So I just want to clarify something about this review paper, which was published in 2014. The paper is a review and was funded by a consumer advocacy group called the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association Research Fund. The first author, Burstein, stated at the end of the paper that he's an associate professor at Drexel University and felt obliged to disclose his primary academic appointment, but the work was completed outside the structures of Drexel University. I think this is important because the author is really distinguishing himself from his academic appointment, and that's because of the association with this consumer advocacy group. In the scientific field and the peer-reviewed literature, disclosing these sorts of conflicts is a very, very important part of interpreting published data. So I thank you for your attention. I'd be happy to take questions.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Joseph, right?
Correct.
And we do have a question from Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, can you remind me of your name? What was your last name?
Joseph, like the first name, but Dr. my Joseph. Last name.
Okay. I just have a couple of questions around just some of the terminology that's used, especially when it comes to some of the academic work that's been done around this. I guess one of my questions, how would you define when the word smoker is used? How is a smoker defined?
Well, a smoker we typically use to define as using a combusted tobacco product. So somebody could smoke cigarettes, they could smoke cigars, little cigars. And so the distinction between an electronic cigarette and a combusted tobacco product is that it's vapor, as I expect you've heard described, that it's vapor that contains propylene glycol, usually nicotine, and flavorings.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so in your testimony, you talked about the lack of evidence that e-cigarettes will lead to people quitting smoking or less smokers. And I guess, would you say that once somebody is strictly somebody who uses e-cigarettes, are they still considered a smoker?
Dr. Joseph.
I guess to be careful, I would call them an electronic cigarette user. They would depending on the product that they're using, they might be exposed to any range of nicotine. So this is a concern because nicotine is very addictive. It puff for puff, vapor is likely to be, and I wouldn't contest this, have a lower concentration of chemicals than combusted tobacco. But it may have a high concentration of nicotine. We could have a huge debate about whether being addicted to nicotine is a good or bad thing, but as a physician, I can say it's probably the best thing to wake up in the morning and not need to get a drug dose of something, including nicotine, in order to feel good during the day.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I guess, you know, in hearing some of the testimonies prior to you and, you know, emails that I've received and everything, I guess my one, in my own way of thinking about this, I have to be careful about how I think about it, because if the folks that testified before you, you know, I'm not sure if we're saying it is to help people quit. Well, if they're not officially smoking combustible tobacco or nicotine anymore, have they essentially quit smoking, and are they now an ex-smoker as they define themselves? And if that's the case, and if that's how we would define it, couldn't you argue that e-cigarettes are to some extent meeting that goal? It's getting them away from being smokers and getting them. And so I'm getting my head, a lot of this has been an education for me today in the last couple of days and looking into this. But it just seems like the terminology and language used around it, you know, could kind of be turned either way, and it seems that, yes, I realize that there's not nearly enough studies yet, and there won't be for years in terms of if this is a healthier option than cigarettes and things of that nature, but I just think if they've moved away from smoking, there are success stories out there of this being, at least in some cases, a way to get people away from tobacco. Would you say that that's a fair...
I am certain that there are success stories for quitting with electronic cigarettes, and we've certainly heard individual but anecdotal evidence even in the last hour that I've been here. I'm an epidemiologist by training, so my scientific background makes me look at population studies of how electronic cigarettes are used. And over 50% of people report reasons other than quitting for using electronic cigarettes. So, for example, being able to get nicotine at times where they're in a place where smoking is restricted, for example, or to cut down on cigarettes. We don't yet know. The real enemy here is combusted tobacco. We know exactly what that does to people, and so there's some room for agreement on some of these things, but until electronic cigarettes are regulated and we know what's in them, we know what the effects are on the use of combusted tobacco, if it prolongs the use, keeps people from stopping, that's going to be, from a public health perspective, a very bad outcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Just follow up on just one other another line from earlier today, and I realize you weren't here earlier in the day, but we had heard from our Commissioner of Health and a line of discussion about nicotine and carcinogens and what's in e-cigarettes versus traditional cigarettes and things of that nature. And I'm just looking for some clarification, because after the fact I was rethinking about some of the things that the Commissioner had said, and I'm fairly certain he referred to nicotine as a carcinogen, but it had been my understanding that it was the other products in the cigarettes that are carcinogens. Nicotine is the addictive substance. It's the other things in a cigarette that are carcinogens. And I was looking at some information from the Federal Department of Human Services, and they list on the back table an established list of chemicals and chemical compounds identified by the FDA, and nicotine is not listed as a carcinogen. So I just am trying to make sure that nicotine itself is not a carcinogen. It's the other things that are emitted in the products that are in traditional cigarettes and potentially e-cigarettes, we don't know yet, that pose the issue of the carcinogen risk. Is that accurate?
Dr. Joseph?
You are correct that the difficult thing about nicotine is that it's addictive, and nicotine typically comes in tobacco, and the other substances, there are hundreds of carcinogens in tobacco. So the fact that people are addicted to nicotine and the most readily available form is in tobacco products is responsible for the cancer burden.
Okay, and just one final comment, Madam Chair. Thank you for your patience. I guess, I think we would all agree that it would be ideal if everyone could wake up and be able to function very well on their own merits without the help of any addictive substance. But I would have to put myself in the camp of I know I need a good dose of caffeine before I am at full working power before, 8 a.m. And so I just, the issue of nicotine, it definitely is, I think it's just that addictive piece, and I'm trying to get my head around nicotine, the dangers of tobacco. Is it just nicotine that's going to these e-cigarettes, and trying to just delineate what's associated with what risks and what method people are getting access to nicotine, and if it's getting us closer to the goal of getting people away from the dangers of tobacco, with, of course, the big looming question of we don't know exactly what's in e-cigarettes. So I guess just a comment on the clarification there.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mack. And just I've got a couple other members on the list with questions, and I just want to say that I don't think that our debate here today is about whether e-cigarettes are better or worse than regular cigarettes for the user. I think the real issue is if you're using it in public, does it pose a risk for the non-user? So I think that would be a way
Madam
to
Chair,
frame
can
it.
I just make one
Dr.
quick
Joseph,
comment
sure.
that nicotine, FDA approved forms of pharmacological nicotine. We have 5 FDA approved forms of nicotine, the same exact nicotine that's in cigarettes or that's in e-cigarettes that are available and have been tested with safety and all sorts of other regulatory applications.
Okay. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is regarding the secondhand smoke. So we've been talking about this is not really about whether how to assess the harm. I mean whether the long-term effects, because we don't have enough data. We know that there's some chemicals in it, but we don't know the level of that of risk. But you were talking, but this is about an aspect of it is the vapor that's emitted, and then so how would you compare that to secondhand smoke? I mean the risk, and that you've acknowledged that there's some merits to that. There is some harm reduction here, but could you talk about that,
Dr. Joseph?
So there have been a number of studies on the chemical composition of secondhand vapor, and there are lower concentrations of carcinogens than in secondhand smoke. One of the concerns that we have, however, is that one of the ways that we've reduced the prevalence of smoking is establishing cultural norms around non-smoking. So it's not just as simple as secondhand vapor versus secondhand smoke, in my estimation. It's also what we show the community, our children, about what is healthy, normal behavior. A lot of electronic cigarettes look all the world like a regular cigarette, and we've become quite successful at having clean air all around us and having that expectation. And so I do think this is a threat to that accomplishment, and I don't think we know what would happen from changing that to smoking behavior, especially for young people.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As far as the smoking cessation rates, I mean, we have 18% general, but in African American, Asian, Native American, we still at the 40-50%. Native American, there's some reservations where it's at 70%. So the program, the cessation programs, they're not working, and so I'm concerned that your arguments regarding normalization are persuasive, but I'm concerned that we don't know what the effects are yet of vaping, and so that if we're going to treat it like cigarettes and it becomes stigmatized, and then at some point we find out that it's not, that there is a significant harm reduction, that is one way to get people off cigarettes, and that we're going to go down that road. So that's my concern, is that it's too early to to start going to that length, and that we really need to look at why our current cessation programs are not working for minority communities.
Okay. I don't know if there was a question there for Dr. Joseph. Okay. All right. We'll go on to Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first question is for the doctor. We talk about the nicotine, just the nicotine alone, and I understand that's a stimulant in the secondhand vaping or whatever. If I was a parent of a newborn, I have two small kids. I don't have a newborn, but I know some people here do. If I had a newborn that was less than a year old and I walked into a place where smoking would be prohibited right now, how would you feel as that parent having a newborn exposed to the secondhand vaping?
Dr. Joseph.
I would prefer to not have a newborn exposed to secondhand vapor. I can't. There's no studies of newborn. You know what happens to a newborn with secondhand vapor. But this is a sort of a conservative principle, and we do this with environmental threats all the time. We do it with lead. If we know something is toxic, the less that you can expose, especially a child, the better, the safer it is, in my view.
Representative Schoen?
Madam Chair, Doctor, thank you. I understand that this probably has done some great things for smoking cessation. I appreciate that. And I understand, so this doesn't change that. They can still sell the bill or sell the product to the author of the bill.
Madam Chair, and Representative Schoen, this does not change how current shops would operate in terms of who, you know, they sell to people over 18. They can allow sampling if it's allowed in their stores. It doesn't change their ability to sell this product to adults.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Halverson. One of the concerns that I've had and I've expressed to you is I actually am concerned with the flavors because I've gone into, when I'm working, gone into our high schools and have kids tell me now that they are vaping, but they've never used cigarettes before because they don't smoke. I have extreme reservations with this product as a standalone. However, I have great reservations in denying it as a whole, but I don't want my kids exposed to this any more than I want them exposed to smoke or from burning tobacco. So I support your bill, and I look forward to voting yes on it.
Okay. And Representative Schoen, this, and of course, this doesn't ban vaping or even, you know, the bill in its entirety doesn't stop people from buying it if they're adults or using it in not public places or outdoors. So,
thank you for highlighting that again, Madam.
Yeah, and let's see, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This would be to the author. On your second page, it describes lobelia delivery. We haven't discussed that, and I'm just wondering if you wanted to unpack that a little bit in terms of what that means and the connotations of. What that means to the folks that are selling vaping products.
Representative Halverson.
Madam Chair, to the question about lobelia, it makes it consistent with the other portions of law that regulate smoking, tobacco, and nicotine delivery devices. For a time, lobelia is it's considered an herbal supplement, and it's had been marketed in the past as a potential cessation opportunity because there were some people that were claiming it acted a lot like nicotine, so it could help wean you off. The FDA actually went after some of the marketers of those folks that were saying, making these health claims because they were not true, but in this particular bill, dealing with lobelia isn't something new. It just makes it consistent with the rest of the law. So the way that we, you know, sell it to minors, the way that we require it to be sold in our stores, just makes it consistent with the way we treat lobelia in other parts of state law. So it's not a kind of a new and emerging issue. It was actually added a few years ago to the statute.
There's one more question.
You have more, Representative Albright?
I do.
Okay. And Representative Albright, I just was reminded that we do have other people here that want to testify that from the public. So if your questions are to the author, maybe we could you hold that and
sure.
We'll get back to you.
Absolutely.
So that we can finish up. So, okay, so if there are no more questions, well, I have also Representative Loeffler. Did you have a question for Dr. Joseph?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Joseph, really appreciate you being here because we haven't had a chance to hear from a researcher, and we've had a lot of testimony from both sides about research, and what has really struck with me, and I just wanted to get your feedback on, is I don't know how you could construct a good research study on the impacts of this as long as we continue to let anyone make their own recipe with whatever ingredients they want, that there would be no consistent, definitive finding about the safety or efficacy of it if we have, you know, products coming from other countries, from other states, people putting things together in their own labs or kitchens. And so as a researcher, how would we even, if we wanted to fund the university or somebody to do this work, is that even possible when you have so many different recipes out there? Because I think that's part of the issue, is it seems like you can put almost anything into your unique batch.
Dr. Joseph.
So that's a great question, and you probably should be a researcher on the basis of it. But the FDA is actually now looking at making standardized electronic cigarettes so that we can have a product to test, so that there might be, you know, say, four different electronic cigarettes with different levels of nicotine that are developed in a laboratory quality controlled method. And then we would use those in either experimental studies or clinical trials to see if they helped or hurt people in smoking cessation efforts, for example. And then what we would have to do is look at the very rapidly changing market. And so say there was an individual cigarette in 2014, look at an analysis of that cigarette and see if it could be mapped to one of these standard cigarettes that could be used more effectively as a research tool.
Okay.
That has not been done yet. So you've actually put your finger on a problem that has been identified by the scientific community already.
Okay, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's just an important point for us to know, because I think that's one of the things that's been troubling me, is that even for people for whom it's been effective and who appreciate it in their life as adult ex-smoking of cigarette people, they still, as a consumer, may not know what they're being exposed to, and mm-hmm. that seems very risky. Thank you.
Okay, and Representative Albright had a question for Dr. Joseph. Go ahead, Doctor.
Dr. Joseph, thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Joseph, you mentioned or identified that there are five types of FDA-approved nicotine already established. Do you happen to know those off the top of your head?
Nicotine patches, nicotine gum, nicotine lozenge, a nicotine inhaler, and nicotine nasal spray. And for a number of those, they're available in different doses.
Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And are those all produced as a derivative of tobacco, or are there other substances that you can derive nicotine from that would be useful for cessation processes?
They are
Dr. Joseph.
I'm sorry. The nicotine is derived from tobacco.
Representative Albright?
Well, I know that there is one company, maybe locally, that's making nicotine from soybeans. Are you aware of that?
I am not.
Dr. Joseph? No.
I am not.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Joseph. And we had, I think, two gentlemen who wanted to testify. And, you know, given the lateness of the hour, I'm going to invite you to testify, but I'd ask you to keep it really brief and try not to cover ground we've already covered. So if you'd like to come up. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Did you say there was one other person as well?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Thought so.
Good. My name is Alex Carlson. I'm actually from Bemidji, Minnesota, but I work down here in South St. Paul for Interstate Truck Driving School. When I first started vaping, I went to my employer because I didn't know much about it, or if, you know, other people knew much about it, and I asked him if he actually had a policy on electronic nicotine delivery devices. And what he told me was, as long as it helps you quit smoking and it doesn't smell like cigarettes or marijuana, was his ad in there, and it doesn't hurt those around you, then go for it. Regardless, you know, this is a private school, but I still I'm respectful about it. You know, I still try not to do it inside, you know, the classroom area or around students indoors. But I do use them in the truck. I teach people how to drive the truck. But again, I'm respectful about it. I roll the window down so that even if they're offended by maybe the smell of my watermelon electronic cigarette, that they wouldn't have to put up with that. And if they were to ask me, which I have actually had no people ask me to stop doing it around them, I would stop, because it's all about being respectful. I'd like to tell you about the community that you're actually seeing before you here today. I'm lucky enough to basically personally know about, I'd say about 50% of them. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names, so not 50% by name, but this is a community that if you are to run out, or your electronic cigarette were to break down or whatever, and you had no option, and you were to tell any one of them that you were going to go buy a pack of cigarettes because yours broke, I would be willing to bet you that any one of them would actually give you their own electronic cigarette and not ask for anything in return. Just so that you don't have to go buy another pack of cigarettes. And mind you, some of their electronic cigarettes run in hundreds of dollars. But this is the kind of community that we've developed by ourselves. And we've done something that, you know, public health organizations, government organizations have kind of failed to give us, was something that we felt worthy of using and actually completely helped us. I'm not saying that they're bad people. I know they're well-intentioned, because they're just trying to help people too. But when you talk about indoor banning, I'd like to ask a question of my community, is if electronic cigarettes were banned indoors everywhere smoking cigarettes were banned, including in the shops, how many of you would still be smoking today?
Well, you know what, we can't do that kind of demonstration here in the
room, I'm sorry.
So,
okay.
You know.
I can assure you that it would be pretty much all of them. I've heard so many good stories, and each time I hear a story of one of them, you know, how they quit smoking, I see a little bit of myself. And indoor smoking bans would basically rip apart that community that we've established. And I know a lot of people would not have the opportunity to understand or be educated, as Benny said, about the community so that they could quit smoking. Anyway, I would be glad to see 1931 amended to get rid of Section 1, which I believe is going to be happening. And I don't support 1974, and I know that's not on the agenda tonight. But I can assure you that even if vaping is not banned in public, that the community that you see in front of you are still going to be continuing to be that respectful community.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, and was there one other person that wanted to testify? Okay, please come down. And again, I would ask you to keep it brief so that we've got other things on our agenda as well.
I understand.
Welcome to the committee.
Hello, committee. My name is Jonathan Hewn.
Mr. Huhn, could you spell your last name for us?
H-U-E-H-N.
Okay, thank you.
I'm kind of different from a lot of the people that are here. I was not a smoker. I was a chewing tobacco user. Flavors for chewing tobacco include sour apple, berry, wintergreen. Wintergreen was my favorite. Could not kick the habit. Tried multiple times. Tried the gum. I mean, that's chewing. That's what you do with gum. It didn't work. The lozenges hurt. I was going to try Chantix, an FDA-approved drug used for smoking cessation, until I was told by a friend, whose also name was John, that he was taking the drug and was experiencing terrible nightmares, and it was just really affecting his life in general. His quality of life was going down. And that is an FDA-approved medication for smoking cessation that has these sort of side effects. I've been vaping for 5 months now. I liked the flavor aspect that was available. Pineapple's my favorite flavor. That might be marketed towards children. Any of these sweet flavors, and that's what really brought me in. So saying that it's purely marketed towards these fruity flavors are purely marketed towards children. Adults eat candy. Adults have pop and sugar and things like that. So I just don't understand the reasoning there. And then maybe that's just me. My first juice that I got was apple pie. I like apple pie. And the manufacturer... the manufacturer that made that particular apple pie brand was referred to earlier tonight as Racketeer. She's sitting over there. And that was the first step that got me to be considered a non-chewer, something that I had been doing for 10 years. And I am a statistic anomaly because I didn't start until I was 21, right? So it was not in high school. It wasn't very much after there. It was just because I was working for a landscapes company, and it just... You know, it was something to do, and I got stuck with it. I understand that this is anecdotal evidence, and every person over there can have their anecdotal evidence. But I think that all of our stories combine kind of creates, well, like was just said, a community. And that is something that I wouldn't see come out of chewing gum or lozenge, you know, the lozenge club. I don't see that happening. As for vapor advocates, like us that are here, because we're advocating for vapor, it is a community. And when these things are, or when you want to change something in your life to end smoking, or the other killer in the United States, obesity, you have groups like the Biggest Loser Club, you know, actively bringing people together for a common goal. So saying that we cannot organize and meet a place with like-minded people in an establishment that says that we can vape in this place, taking away that decision that we cannot organize and do what is helping us to, in our minds, and I'll admit it's in our minds, that is saving our lives. I mean, I feel if we're going to get bullied, to go outside and to go out with the smokers, I feel that's not right. And that's something there. And I did have something to add in particular to this bill.
Can I ask you to really wrap it up?
Yep. This is my last thing, and it's just a question. I had the line. I had it circled. There it is. Line 1.15. I was just curious. You ever have a splinter in your mind that just bugs you and you have to ask? You just have to ask. Inhale or exhale vapor from electronic delivery device. Wouldn't that just be the use? Or, like, I mean, if you inhale, you have to exhale, right? I just don't understand the language. I don't know. It just bothered me.
Right.
I just had to say it.
Right. Well, Mr. Hume, this is, as I understand it, this is just the portion that's adding it to adding a ban in public schools. That's all.
Right. No, it's just the language, inhale or exhale. To do one, you have to do the other. It seems unless that is your last breath.
I see.
It seems clerical, but I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And I got everyone to laugh, so that's my wrapping it up.
Yes.
Any questions for me?
Yeah. Are there any questions for this witness, members? Okay. Not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Okay. Other discussion, members, before we vote on the amendment. Representative Mack.
It's not to the amendment, Madam Chair. I just had a question on procedure. We're obviously starting off in the new session. Is this just moving forward as an oral amendment? I know, and I guess it's just in regards to, and it occurred to me after our last, when we came together, but we typically have a 24-hour rule with amendments, and so I'm just curious, is that changing this session in terms of how that works? Is this considered, I would consider a deletion of a section minor, so I'm just looking for precedence in going forward, how that interacts.
Right, Representative Mack, we don't have a 24-hour rule. Remember last session, I took that out of our committee rules. So in this committee, we don't have a 24-hour rule.
I apologize, okay. Madam Chair. That did actually completely slip my mind that we got rid of that. So thank you for that clarification. Okay. I apologize.
Okay. And I'm not sure, you know, in the case where a bill is starting out anyway, if we wanted to, this is a motion to delete a section, not the kind of thing that people typically need a lot of advance notice on anyway. So, other discussion on I'm going to move to delete section one of the bill. Am I correct, Representative Halverson, that is the motion that would remove the portion that adds the electronic devices to the Clean Indoor Air Act? Correct,
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, so that would be my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion prevails. Okay, so on the bill as amended, any other discussion? Representative Albright.
Now this go to the author. Representative, and is looking, this may be for if this bill will be re-referred at some point to judiciary, but I'm just wondering if you go online. You can go to the blue e-referred at some point to judiciary, but I'm just wondering, if you go online, you can go to the blue e-cig site, and quite literally, you know, it's a simple question of are you over or under age 18, and it just basically prompts you to say, you better not lie, you know, this site is only for those over 18. So my question is, if our attempt is to prevent this type of a product to fall into the hands to those under age 18. I'm just wondering if we've contemplated, or if it's even possible at all, how would we go about patrolling the usage over the internet, which, I got to be candid, my kids know more about how to work this thing than I do. Have you contemplated how those ramifications would affect underage use of the product?
Madam Chair.
Representative Halverson.
And Representative Albright, I think that is an excellent question, and it certainly underscores how challenging commerce can be in this day and age. And it is a commerce question, and that particular type of regulation would happen much more at the federal level. I would say that it shouldn't preclude us as a state from acting to keep these products out of the hands of minors in Minnesota, because you could say that about any product, from steroids to narcotics to anything. There's a lot of things that can be procured on the internet that should not be in the hands of minors, and we need to it shouldn't get in our way of making sure that in Minnesota that we are not making it easier for kids to get these products.
Representative Albright, okay. Okay, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, this bill, you know, it reminds me that we kind of need a Freedom to Breathe Act from regulations. And a little concerning here, when the Freedom to Breathe Act was passed and banned smoking from inside establishments of restaurants and bars in greater Minnesota, that created some financial burdens for our small restaurants and bars up there. And in order to pull in revenue, they lobbied for electronic pull tabs to kind of bring more people into the establishments. And I do know that the vapors enjoy being able to vape inside instead of having to go outside in the bitter cold. Bar owners like that as well, brings people into their establishments. And so I'm just hoping, as we can move this bill forward, that there can be some exceptions to the restaurants and bars. That's my
Representative
plug.
Representative Franson, we took that whole section out.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. Not seeing any. So I will renew my motion that House File 1988, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is passed on to GovOps. Thank you very much, Representative Albertson. Yes, Representative.
Just a procedural question. You just used the wrong bill number.
Oh, I'm sorry.
31, not 1988.
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I have a little script here in it.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's just do it again just to make sure, okay, if that's all right with everybody. Thank you, Representative Morgan. So I will renew my motion that House File 1931 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, thank you. The correct motion is approved, and the correct bill is sent on. Thank you, everybody. So those leaving, please be quiet, because we're going to continue with our agenda. And the next bill up is House File 1831. What was that? Oh, that was one from him.
I'm just going to read this and hand it over.
That's basically up. Go ahead.
This shows you on the script, but no, you know what? All right, welcome to the committee, Representative Fritz, and please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you,
and
Madam
members
Chair.
Of the audience, again, please quietly leave, because we're going to continue with our work here. You're welcome to stay if you like. Go ahead, Representative
Thank
Fritz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I do have, I see, a couple of amendments, and we can get to those maybe after I just explain the bill a little bit, and then have my testifiers alongside of me help me with that. This bill I would like referred to finance, to healthcare finance. It has to come through here, so I don't think it should take up a whole lot of time.
Okay, we have that, Representative Fritz. So first of all, let's get your bill before the committee. So Representative Fritz moves that House File 1831 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. And then I understand you have an author's amendment, Representative Fritz. Do you want to move that first, or
yeah, we
tell us
that.
What that is, and then we'll move it?
You know, I want to describe the bill, and that might tell you a little bit more. That,
sure, however you want to do it.
Because we've been before this committee before on another similar occasion. The purpose of House File 1831 is to provide reimbursement to licensed independent clinical social workers for consultation, primary care practitioners regarding mental health treatment and clientele within the interdisciplinary structure of quality care. social workers provide an array of varying mental health services and have skill and training in assessing, treating, and preventing psychological, behavioral, emotional, social, environmental problems affecting the consumers in mental health care. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to turn it over to, but for us out in greater Minnesota, the utilization of the social worker is paramount to addressing these issues and very necessary. So we want to include them, and that's why we need to get this onto finance. And I'm going to turn this over to Bill Straczynski, and he can add.
Okay, Mr. Straczynski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Straczynski, and I'm here. I represent the Minnesota Society for Clinical Social Workers. Last session, as you may recall, maybe not recall, it was a long session, you did adopt and pass legislation which dealt with the same issue, which provided for reimbursement in mental health practitioners for psychologists, actually. This legislation does exactly the same thing it did last session. The fiscal note on it, I think, regarding this particular impact, somewhere around $100,000 for the biennium, as I recall, the one that was being prepared recently. Basically, clinical social workers are trained in practice in the systems model, which naturally and skillfully includes the interdisciplinary communications with practitioners. We had a witness here today who was a clinical social worker. I am not. I'm a lobbyist, but she could not be here this evening. But as I understand it, and having worked with the psychologists and everybody over all the lot of years, the continuum care model, for example, people who have anxiety moving into a nursing home, they're anxious about that. They work with a physician. They work with a social worker many times, clinical licensed social worker. Kids who are bullied at school do the same thing. People with depression, it's the same thing, and psychologists also do that. So it's important that this clinical social worker be reimbursed for their services and encouraged to work with the healthcare practitioner, the physicians. It's just that simple. That's what this bill does. We ask for your support.
Yes, and Madam Chair, to that, then I would, we also have an amendment, the DE1 amendment. I think maybe we ought to, I'd like to have that.
Okay, so we've got the DE1 amendment, and do you want to just... That just, as I understand it, kind of redrafts the bill in a more appropriate form. Is that
correct?
How I understand it?
Correct.
Okay. Do members have questions on the DE before we vote on it? Okay. Seeing none, so Representative Fritz moves the DE1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. So we have the DE1 before us. Members have questions about that, about the bill?
And then I have another amendment after we had that one in. And this is, this is a short session, so we have a lot of work to do in a short amount of time. So I'm actually hoping that we have big enough shoulders. And I've been asked to include, and I've accepted, the licensed marriage and family therapists in this in this legislation. So that's what this amendment does. It includes them as well. And I do have a testifier here tonight that could say a few words about their work, the important work that they do. If we could have them testify and then go to the amendment, or just...
I think if we're amending the DE1, I think we need to take testimony on this amendment now.
Correct.
So that would be fine. So
thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Beth Nelson. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm currently the president-elect of the Minnesota Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. And as part of the member of the core mental health profession, we also are trained to diagnose and treat mental illness, along with also being systemic thinkers. I'm trained in systems and relationships. So we also believe it would be really important to be included in this bill, because I know my practice, I work in South Minneapolis and in Minneapolis, and a lot of the communities, people, children's families I serve are people who use MA. And so it is for us also to be included in that. We're going to better serve the communities that we work with.
Okay, thank you. So are there questions to the amendment? Okay. Oh, there's an oral amendment to the amendment? There's a correction to this, Representative Fritz?
I think we have to get the word licensed on it.
Licensed.
Okay, yes. Mr. Chun, maybe you can tell us what the issue is here.
Madam Chair and members, I've just been told by someone, you know, working in the area that we should refer to the a licensed marriage and family therapist. So the oral amendment would be on line 1.4 before the word marriage, insert licensed.
Okay, so Representative Fritz will incorporate that amendment, inserting the word licensed before the word marriage, correct?
Representative Fritz?
Yes. Okay, so that change is incorporated. Right, Mr. Chun, that's okay to do, right? We're just incorporating
sure.
it. Okay. So are there questions on the amendment with the incorporation? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All opposed, no. Motion prevails, the amendment is adopted. Okay, so we have before us the bill as amended. Mm-hmm. Is there any discussion or questions or discussion on the bill? Okay, I just have one question, Representative Fritz. So does this limit the consultation, in either case, with either of these professionals, to a patient with whom does the social worker or the marriage and family therapist have to have a relationship with the patient who's being consulted about, or can the other practitioner just say, I've got somebody here and I just want to talk to you about a situation I'm facing with this patient? Do you understand my question?
I do understand. I've seen that. I've had those experiences, but I'm going to turn it over to the expert.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, being a closet therapist myself as a lobbyist, here's my response to that question. I think we're primarily looking at it that they're a client of the clinical social worker already and working with the primary care physician. So there's already the direct linkage to their client. And they do consults with the primary care physician saying, here's what's going on in the mental health setting. And the physician says, wants to know what's going on, so they would be reimbursed for that service. I don't think it's the other way. But there's an expert who's in the business.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to comment?
To answer your question, Madam Chair, it is imperative that it's the direct relationship with the client, because it's everything would be protected, of course, under HIPAA. So you would want that, you would have to have a release of information
with
the direct care provider.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Nelson. And because it doesn't say that in the law. I mean, there's nothing here that specifies that, but as I'm understanding you, Ms. Nelson, you're saying that would pretty much be, because a practitioner can't just call you up and say, I've got a patient here, I'm going to tell you about him. Is that kind of what you're saying, that
right,
the law prohibits that, doing that?
Correct. They would have to have a release of information.
Okay, thank you. Other discussion, questions? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Fritz.
I just wanted to let you know that NAMI also is here, and they have are in agreement. And I just wanted to point that out, because he's been here all day.
Okay.
So we
appreciate that. Thank you.
I appreciate the support.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Fritz. So with that, Representative Fritz renews her motion that House File 1831, got the right number? Yep.
Got it.
As amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative
Fritz. Thank
you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee.
Thank you.
Okay, the last bill for the night, members, and I know that's the words everybody wants to hear, right? The last bill for the evening is my bill, House File 1971. I just remind you that we heard this bill in an informational hearing during the interim, and now it's before us. I'm going to move that it's in the possession of the committee now, and I'm going to move that House File 1971 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Is there any discussion to the motion?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, I'll renew that motion that House File 1971 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails, and we are adjourned. Thank you, members.
Thank you.